This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. After several failed attempts, Republican leaders are back at their latest repeal effort for the Affordable Care Act. The Graham-Cassidy bill caps funding to Medicaid and instead transfers lump sums directly to states. GOP lawmakers are now pushing to pass the bill before the end of the month. Will this repeal effort stick? Plus, President Trump delivered his first official address to the United Nations General Assembly this week and doubled down on his America First theme and referred to the North Korean leader as Rocket Man. A few days later, he signed a far-reaching executive order that punishes those who trade with North Korea. Meanwhile, in Washington, Special Counsel Robert Mueller continues to probe the nooks and crannies of the White House to determine the extent of the Trump campaign's complicity in the Russian election meddling scandal. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us now. Welcome back, Ken.
Hi, Frank. Another quiet week.
Another quiet week in Washington. Affordable Care Act, let's say. You know, it's interesting. Let's talk about how this one compares to the previous two attempts.
Well, it's probably even more. I mean, if you're an opponent of it, and I think polls indicate that many Americans, what they know of it, are opposed to it, it seems more draconian than ever before, because not only does it halt expansion of Medicaid, but it cuts Medicaid. It removes many more people with coverage for health coverage, for health care costs than the previous incarnations of it. And of course, the big change of Graham-Cassidy is that it doles out about $1 trillion to the states in block grants, where the states can basically spend whatever way they want to. And of course, when you're taking away states that have expanded Medicaid under Obamacare, you'll lose a lot of, these states will lose billions of dollars. That includes states like North Carolina and Ohio and other states that have Republican senators that so far are completely willing to vote for this new bill.
Well, here's the interesting thing about North Carolina, because North Carolina is one of the states that did not expand Medicaid. And under Graham-Cassidy, those states, generally speaking, would not be hurt as much because they're not going to lose as much, right? Those other states are actually right. Going to lose even more. However, the Kaiser Family Foundation has done an analysis. We can't expect the CBO to do anything in time. So we've got this analysis by the Kaiser Family Foundation that shows that North Carolina will lose $8.1 billion in this. And that's because so many people in this state have used the exchange. In other words, so many people have benefited by ACA that this state, even though it didn't expand Medicaid, stands to lose over $8 billion.
It's remarkable. And, you mentioned a very good point that the CBO hasn't had time to calculate what the cost will be of the Graham-Cassidy. I don't even know if this bill existed a week ago. Everybody was saying, well, Obamacare is probably, the repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act is probably dead for at least until after the 2018 elections, when a lot of people think that Republicans will pick up seats in the Senate. It seemed like the Republicans realized, oh my goodness, September 30th is coming up, and that means that's the deadline for be able to pay under reconciliation. They can pass this health care overhaul bill by 50 votes, and after September 30th, this reconciliation budget process goes away, and it would have to be 60 votes, which is what the Affordable Care Act passed with in 2009 and 2010. So something that didn't even exist a week ago, and suddenly everybody, and I don't think anybody's rushing. John McCain talked about orderly process in the Senate. I don't know how many people could have possibly read the language of it, although what we have seen of it is just more and more cuts, more and more people taken off coverage, more and more people with pre-existing conditions may not be granted coverage under this. It's pretty tough, and yet a lot of people don't even know if it's – a lot of people think that this could very well pass because Republicans really want an opportunity to pass it before this deadline.
And there's this payoff to the states, the $1 trillion payoff to states,
right.
that sweetens the pot and kind of takes the sting away, at least from lawmakers. But let me ask you about this, about the analysis. I think it might be a fair criticism to say that any legislation of this magnitude that gets rushed through without a public policy analysis, how much will it cost, who's going to be hurt, all of those kind of that probably not a good idea from a public policy standpoint to rush legislation like this through. That may be a fair criticism. But let's take a look at the political analysis. And I want to know about the calculus there, Ken, because when people were threatened with the loss of ACA help, ACA coverage, the Republicans got an earful, right? They heard from their constituents, this isn't going to stand. We're not going to like it. What makes this different? And aren't they worried that they could suffer from their own success in the polls in coming years?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, I agree with that. They certainly could. If you're looking at the short term, though, all the senators that are talking about voting no on this, none of them are up for re-election in 2018. All the the people like Rob Portman in Ohio, where John Kasich says this would be a disaster for Ohio. In Alaska, where you have governor, the independent governor there, Walker, there, saying this would be terrible for Alaska. Dan Sullivan, the Republican there, is also talking about voting for it. So, you know, it seems to be very short-term. They want to make President Trump happy. They want to make Mitch McConnell happy. And basically, I suspect that McConnell and Trump, all they want to do is to say, we have a victory here, because they've had no victories so far. But in the long run, if the fact that millions more will be thrown out of coverage, then, you know, I mean, then the long-term political, I mean, I know voters have short memories, but I kind of think that if you're losing your health care, I think they'll have certainly much longer memories.
If you still don't have health care in 2020, it's not about memory. It's about what's happening today and how I had to leave work and got fired because I couldn't get health care.
That's right? Exactly right.
So, no, it's not about memory. So let me ask you this. Let's talk about Donald Trump's speech at the UN now.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, your goodness. Quite a speech. And, but here he is doubling down on this theme of America First and calling the North Korea's leader Rocket Man. What about the fallout from this speech, Ken?
Well, I mean, there's so many things that are just so remarkable about it. The fact that that Kim returned the favor by calling Trump, a dottered or whatever he
called him.
A
dottered. I've never heard the noun. I've heard dottering, but I've never heard someone called a dottered. So I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know what the word in
basically,
Korean is.
I think it's like a senile old man who it's so, I mean, it's like calling them four eyes. I mean, it's something you do in third grade.
It is third grade.
You don't do it at the UN. And it's just, look, we expected an America First speech. And we expected calling for more and more sanctions on North Korea. Not that they've worked so far, but you understand that. But to talk about totally destroying North Korea and then talking about Rocket Man, you know, as if you're in third grade. It's just like I didn't see any. I was looking for a reaction from Nikki Haley and Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State and the UN ambassador. I didn't see any, but they had to be rolling their eyes. It's not what a president does, but of course, you know, saying what a president does and what Donald Trump does is often two different things completely.
Let's talk about watching this thing play out in the international stage, of course, and then it's one thing to maybe cater to a local, your audience or your base, and then the impact on the international stage. And again, when we try to make deals with our allies, you know, what this means for going forward in terms of our diplomatic relations with our foreign partners. I mean, I guess that's the other question. We know what it does for his base. They love this kind of a speech, but, you know, the big question is, going forward, can you find support for these kinds of even sanctions going forward if you use that kind of language?
Well, of course, you know, the UN had a watered down sanctions on North Korea the other day that displeased the U.S. But I think that in the days since the speech, the fact that President Trump has pushed for even more tougher sanctions, it seems like China is going along with it. China seems to indicate that they're not going to do any new business with North Korea. But look, we've seen decades of sanctions against the Pyongyang regime, and nothing seems to work. You know, the fact that Kim is talking about, not even talking about, but exploding hydrogen bomb tests over the Pacific Ocean and talking about more intercontinental ballistic missile tests. So I don't know what sanctions do. Sorry about the English. I didn't mean to be anti-Semitic there. But I mean, but the fact is that nothing seems to work so far, and certainly belligerence doesn't work either. But getting back to what Trump said at the UN, though, when you compare that and when he talked about Iran saying it's an embarrassment. And, of course, if you want to renegotiate the deal, well, you can't do it unilaterally. You have five other countries, including China and Russia, that may not be willing to renegotiate the deal. And if you renegotiate, well, Iran may have some problems, too. So So it just seems like sometimes the president is very quick to say things like fire and fury, for example, and then on sober second thought, maybe sober second thought talking to his aides, he comes up with more pragmatic views. But it's the initial stuff, he says, that just drives everybody crazy. And I, as I said, I was watching his speech at the UN on Tuesday, and I didn't blink and my jaw dropped. I mean, the thought of anybody, Ronald Reagan, Barack Obama, anybody in history saying something, well, maybe Garfield might have done that, but I don't know about that. But who says, who talks like that?
Yeah. Well, now we know. Who doesn't talk like that so much anymore in the Robert Mueller investigation of White House alleged complicity in the Russian meddling scandal, is Donald Trump. He seems to be not tweeting, perhaps listening to his lawyers as this investigation heats up. And it certainly did this week, didn't it?
Well, absolutely. And what's remarkable about this, we kept talking about what the Trump administration, the Trump campaign may have done with Russians as far as collusion prior to the election. But now, by all indications, it seems like Robert Mueller is talking about Trump's actions while he's been in the White House. What the firing of James Comey, the firing of Michael Flynn, the conversations he's had with the Russians after Comey was fired and said, boy, you know, that was a great relief. Obviously, it sounds like that Mueller is very close to an indictment of Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign chair. What Flynn may have done, Michael Flynn may have done with relations with the Russians. So, you know, it's getting closer and closer and closer. And you talk about, you see more and more indications of Trump attorneys being very more closed-lipped and closed-mouthed and nervous about what's going on. And, you know, you talk about how so many people are distracted by what Donald Trump does. It's clear that Robert Mueller is not distracted.
No, he's not distracted. It's always the cover-up. Hey, Ken, out of time, but thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Just ahead, Charles Frazier's Civil War love story, Cold Mountain, comes to the opera stage, and we'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. Broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.